grace and His love are enough for me. And with this one thing, my heart overflows. Yes, with this, my heart overflows.
Thank you. So I think we'll bite into a bit of my time, and I'll ask the team to come up, and we'll do a song that I wrote back in 2016, actually. It appears on our last album. It's called Huniachi. The song's called Huniachi, but the album's called Usifadhaike. Don't worry about anything. Taken from Matthew 6:25-34. But Huniachi is actually God's promise to us that He'll never leave us nor forsake us. And though you go through the storms and the water and the fires, they will not overwhelm you. Taken from Isaiah 43. And we'll do a microcosmic representation of it. If you feel comfortable, you can sing along. In case you have your phone, you can actually pick up the lyrics on my website. That's www.kigamemedia.org, and you can follow along. Huniachi.
Ninaiweka imani yangu kwako Baba. naishi kwa ahadi yako Bwana, huniachi. Umeahidi wewe Bwana, huniachi. Hadi mwisho wa dahari unisema, huniachi.
Wewe ni Mungu.
Wewe ni Mungu uliye mwaminifu siku zote.
Mimi ninaiweka imani yangu.
Mimi ninaiweka imani yangu kwako Baba.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, thank you so much. I wish we had more time to, you know, just celebrate and so on. One tribe is really a nice concept. So this afternoon, I guess you're here because you don't like the stuff that's going on in your life or things you've observed in your life before. And you're looking for answers. Or maybe you're just amused, what will he say? Whatever reason you're here, you're welcome. Maybe the problem of evil is your big missile that you use to refuse the authority of God in your life. So you don't like God because there's too much suffering in the world and maybe in your life, in your family. And so you are here to check out if I will make sense. I will admit that this is the one question that unites both the Christian and the non-Christian. Because the Christians suffer. They go through stuff. Jesus himself suffered. He went through stuff. He was actually crucified. So he underwent what you'd call some kind of maximum pain on behalf of humanity. And so Christians do suffer. His disciples were flogged and they were jailed. They suffered. And every Christian that I know has gone through some kind of suffering. It could be, you know, big things. It could be small things. It could be sometimes as small as believing in Jesus Christ and going back to your family and you tell them that you're born again and they begin to treat you differently from how they did before you became a Christian. And Jesus said, in this world, you will, not might, you will have tribulation. But he didn't stop there. He said, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. And so Christians suffer. Let nobody deceive you that they don't. The last time I checked, I'm still a Christian and I've suffered a lot. And there are people today who come on television or on radio and say, if you are born again and you suffer, there is a problem. They'll say either there is hidden sin that you have, you know, done, or you are cursed, you are a victim of an ancestral family curse or something. Or they will say that you do not have enough faith. If you had, you would not suffer. And these are rogue teachers because they teach quite contrary to the Bible, and the Bible is full of people that were used of God in a big way that suffered. Noah suffered ridicule. Abraham suffered hunger pains and somebody taking his wife twice, the Pharaoh of Egypt and the king of Gerar, and God asking him to do strange things that tested his emotions, like having his son sacrificed. Abraham went through, you know, marital stuff, and he's waiting for a child for a long time. The child doesn't come, and so on. And I'm sure he was sad to see Hagar, you know, walk away with Ishmael and so on. Well, Rebecca was barren for a long time. Jacob really suffered. Those of you that have had relational issues, look at Jacob. You work so hard to get the love of your life for 7 years, and then your wages are changed. Then you're told another 7. I don't know that I would be that patient. But Jacob went through stuff. And the deception by his own children. And even if you were to look at his brother Esau being coned out of a birthright, you know, it's just. And Moses in Egypt and Elijah. In fact, Elijah comes to a point in his life when he says, "Lord, just kill me. I mean, it's too much." And Paul had what he called the thorn in the flesh. If you read 2 Corinthians 12, he talks about having a thorn in the flesh, and people speculate and they think it was, a visual handicap or challenge, especially because Paul sometimes says, "See how big letters I have written these words with," you know. So, whatever it was, I don't know what it was. He said he talked to God 3 times and said, "You take it away." But God told him, "No, but my grace is sufficient for you, because my power is made manifest in weakness." And we know that Joseph made a similar statement. His brother sold him into Egyptian slavery, and at the end of it all, he says, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save many lives." Of course, I know that you know about Job. These are holy men. These are people that were walking with God. And God gave a testimony of Job and said, there's nobody who's as righteous as he is. And he suffered stuff to the point that he nearly lost the loyalty of his family, of his wife. So this demonstrates to us that you can have faith and suffer. And however, in each of these cases, I'll put it to you that God comes again and again and demonstrates that you can suffer and live above it. But non-Christians suffer too. There are people in this world that do not know God, and their reason is, "I don't want God because there's too much suffering." So you don't have God and you suffer. What's the big deal? But that be as it may, that's one of the biggest challenge that the atheist brings on the table when it comes to faith in God. And so, I will look a little bit at the atheist camp, the reasons why a lot of people today don't want to believe in God as relates to suffering. Of course, there are 2 kinds of suffering. You have what you would call natural suffering or natural evil, the floods, the earthquakes, diseases and so on, what the lawyers would call the acts of God, the tsunamis and so on. And then you have moral evil, you know, murder, abortion, you know, and you have people stealing from each other, etc. A lot of bad things that happen more out of moral choices or responsibility or failure of it. And so the question goes, if God made everything, God created everything, then he must also have created evil. But that is easy to answer because, yes, God created everything, but evil is not a thing. I can't send you to Two Rivers to buy me 3 kilograms of evil. These are not tangible, physical, corporeal things. Evil is not a thing or a being. Evil is a lack in things. It's a deprivation, or shall I just say a privation within something. And a privation means that something is supposed to be there, but it is not there. So, for example, all of you can see, and I can't. So the evil factor is not because I am or I'm not a human being. It's that as a human being, I'm supposed to have sight, and I don't. I'm potentially able to see. In fact, I saw for the first 3 years of my life. So a privation is that something ought to be there, but it's not. It's a lack in things. It's like rot to a tree and rust to iron. You know, a lack of wholeness. And so evil is not a thing. It's a privation. But you cannot expect sight of a stone, because a stone is not a creature of sight. You cannot expect grades from a cat, the animal cat, because a cat is not a school-going creature, at least not school in the way we know it. And so evil is a privation. So you cannot say God created evil. No. But you also cannot say that God dictates evil, because that's the other argument that people put forth, that God dictates evil, that he commands it, he wills it. The truth of the matter is that that comes out of a misunderstanding of what free will is. Free will is that you have volition. You have the ability or the capacity to choose between alternatives. The capacity that you are endowed with the possibility to choose. And that is what actually separates us from creatures of the wild, brute creatures and beasts, because they don't have volition. We have volition. You cannot expect a dog to behave morally. You cannot expect a lion to obey the Kenya's constitution or the laws of the land. You'd be wasting your time. But you and I have volition. And it is only human beings, so to speak, on this earth, that are given that privilege. It means that you can be your own boss. You can choose. And those who fight God's provision of free will don't understand what they're asking. Because lack of free will means that you're created like a robot. You're programmed in a particular way so that you only do what God wants you to do. But God has not programmed us as robots. I don't think any one of you who challenges God on the basis of free will really means it. Because were God to program you, you would not like it either. You'd want your space. But free will is a package that also makes it possible for you to love God. Forced love is a contradiction. You cannot tell a woman, as a man, you can't tell a woman, you must love me. The woman is created with the capacity to say yes or no. Forced love is a contradiction. And in any case, you too, as a man, cannot be forced to love every woman. If a woman comes to you and says, you must love me. You know, this kind of volition works this way. That you can only, the possibility of loving someone is juxtaposed with the possibility not to love. And so the only way you can love God and worship him actually is that you choose volitionally. And how nice to be able to choose. Most of us feel nice when we make choices. Oh, I'm glad I chose you. I am glad I chose this course. I'm glad I chose this job. You feel good. It affirms you as a person, but it builds you up also. And that is how God has wired us. In fact, even when he says, you know, we will not have any other gods before him, he then provides the possibility for us not to love. In fact, having other gods means that you can choose between God and some other gods, which are really not gods. And so, let me just put it this way, if you had a computer and you were looking for love, and you programmed your screensaver to automatically read, I love you, you would feel nothing. Because the computer did not choose to love you. In fact, you are the one who programmed it. And if you go to my website on the, you know, Ask Reuben a question, there's a question there about masturbation and all these things. And I say, that is exactly why masturbation is absurd, because you're loving yourself in the process. And when you hear the Whitney Houstons and so on singing the greatest love is inside of you, I'm asking, because love entails the I, thou, me, you relationship. So if I'm loving myself, what is it I'm loving? There's no relationship. But that be as it may, the atheist would then raise a dilemma that the philosopher David Hume raised one time. There's a book that Hume wrote that's called Dialogues Concerning Natural Religion that is available in almost every university library. Dialogues Concerning Natural Religion. And he says this in the book, that, let me simplify it and say, that Christianity is wrong in positing a God who is all-powerful and a God who is all-loving. In fact, I would add all-present, omnipresent as well. That you, and he says, you cannot have the two. Either God is all-powerful but not all-loving, or he's all-loving but not all-powerful. Because if you grant both, then you cannot answer the problem of evil in the world. And this is the dilemma. That if God is all-powerful, then he has all the power, isn't it? He has all the power and can intervene and crush evil and finish evil. But evil exists, therefore he's not that powerful. Or the other option is that God is so loving, you know, is so loving. And an all-loving God certainly would be willing to do something about evil. But evil persists, therefore, he's not all-loving. And he says, you can't have the two. Fine. He doesn't have all the power. Yes, he has all the love. Oh, I wish I could do something about evil so much, but I'm powerless. Or, I have all the power, but I'm not that good. I'm not that loving. Because I'm not using all the power I have to intervene. And so they feel they've cornered God on the basis of his attributes, as taught in the Bible and by Christians. And so this afternoon, I would like to give a brief response to this particular crisis by asking, is it possible to have a good God and a powerful God and deal with a problem of evil? The answer is yes, according to me, as I read the scriptures and as reason informs me. First of all, it is possible to have a good God and a powerful God and have the persistence of evil, because evil does not, or rather, man cannot be absolved of his role in the experience of evil in the world. Many times we lift our guns against God and we blame God for all the evil, when most of the evil, if not all, is actually the creation of man. Let me first begin with natural evil, because that is where the big battle is. Right now, as a country, we are consumed with the restoration of the Mau forest. Why are we so meticulous about the restoration of the Mau forest, the water catchment areas? It's because if we don't deal with the Mau crisis, Kenya is going to become a desert. So I ask you, how did we lose the Mau? Did God send angels from heaven to destroy the Mau? No. Did God go to the Mau and cut down trees one by one? No. So what caused the Mau crisis? It's Kenyans. With their greed for land and property and money. So you do all the logging and you do everything in your power to destroy. And then you curse God and you say, I cannot believe in you, God, because you created desertification. Nonsense. Total nonsense. We created deserts. When God made the world and put Adam in it and so on, he said, subdue the earth and replenish it. Take care of it. It is our mandate to ensure equilibrium in creation. It is our responsibility. I'm so sad that we needed a Wangari Maathai to preserve Kenya when God already gave us the mandate. She was playing her part. What about you? Now, back in 1984, I think it was, the musicians of the world gathered and recorded a song. We are the world, you know. We are the children. We are the ones to make a better day. So let's start giving. Giving what? Money. To buy food for Ethiopia. And as they are raising money to buy food for Ethiopia, Ethiopia is exporting food. We have hunger and starvation in Turkana and Ukambani and other parts of this country and other parts of this continent, not because God has not played his part. Africa is one of the richest continents in the world. In fact, the most rich. And I can put it to you that the problems of Africa are not God-made. They are man-made. Right now we are crying about corruption. And some people don't want God because there is corruption in the world. Who is corrupt? The angels? No. We have no restraint. We are greedy. We are so greedy as a people. God has given us one of the best continents. We cannot even take care of health and blame God for diseases. We can't take care of education and we say some people have not gone to school. What's your problem? Before the African atheist picks up his or her guns against God, first of all, play your part. And that will take away the blame. Some miracles are economic and political. So, dare I hear you again blaming God because of Africa's problems? We are the ones who elect the corrupt leaders. We are the ones who love to be bribed. We are the ones who love greed or do nothing about it. Can we please once and for all absolve God of that nonsense? Number two. Well, let me hitchhike on something. There are a lot of us that go to school and we learn that earthquakes are good for the balance of the rocks underneath the surface of the earth. And then the next day, we write in the newspaper, how can God allow earthquakes? How can God allow bacteria? And then we enjoy maziwa mala. If God didn't create bacteria, bodies would not decompose. And we can go on and on. But let's not ever, ever raise a blame against the God of the Bible on the question of natural and moral evil when actually we are the ones who cause evil. All these, when somebody takes a young college girl, impregnates her, then, you know, plans or, you know, whether it's true or false, well, she dies. Somebody kills her and kills the baby inside her womb. It's not God. It's man. But secondly, is it possible for there to be a good God and a powerful God and evil persist? Yes, because the persistence of evil is not an end in itself. Persistence means it's ongoing. But persistence does not answer the question of termination. So the termination of evil is excluded from the debate on persistence. The fact that evil persists does not mean that it will not be solved or it will not be dealt with. The fact that God does not deal with it now does not mean he'll never deal with it. In fact, most of us would not like it if God dealt with our evils now. Okay? Because some of it would interfere with our free will. Let me give an example. You really, really don't want to come for this meeting because it's a Christian meeting and somebody forces you, let's go, we must, and, you know, pushes you with, you know, with a gun held to your head. You will come and you will be here, but your whole mind will be elsewhere. Because even forced worship is not worship. And so God does not force anyone. Say you wanted to write a book so badly, you know, bigger than mine, on the non-existence of God. And you say, Lord, how can you allow me to write such a book? Can't you even stop me? Of course, if he now stopped it, it would work something like this. You go to your laptop, ready to write, and he causes the laptop to explode. You know? He said, God, how can you explode my laptop? Give me the freedom to write. Well, if he explodes the laptop, he would have stopped you from writing. And some of you, he actually does stop. You know, some of us have had to come to faith because there was a problem in our lives. I pray you don't let God use evil that way in your life so that he can call your attention. But the persistence of evil is solved primarily by God's own word. He says in Revelation 21 from verse 1, John writing, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The old had passed away, everything was new. And he says, and I heard the voice of God saying, you know, behold, the tabernacle of God is with his people. He shall be their God. They shall be his people and he shall be their God. And then it goes on to say, and there will be no more crying, no more sorrow, you know, because no more pain. The former things will have passed away. He promises an end, a permanent end to evil. If you read Isaiah 11, he promises, in fact, a messianic age before that, on this earth, where the lion and the lamb will lie together, the young child will be able to put his hand in the hole of the cobra, and it says the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord the same way the waters cover the sea. So he's going to deal with it permanently. And if God is going to deal with evil and quarantine it forever, what makes you think that evil cannot be dealt with? And by the way, just for your information, he deals with evil in our lives all the time. Every day, even now. Why don't the stars fall on us? How come this roof is not caving in? How come someone is not driving an aircraft onto this Kigwa Hotel the same way they did on the Twin Towers? How come you're seated here and you're not in hospital or at a mortuary? How come? Are you saying that people, there are no people in hospitals, there are no people in mortuaries? How come you're here, seated, of sound mind, able to think properly as to oppose God? How come? How come that this morning we can worship in peace without anybody holding a gun at us or a grenade? God prevents evil all the time. How come you drove safely to church this morning in a country that has accidents every single day? And so, is it that God hates the other people and loves you more than them? No. We are all products of different histories and circumstances and so on. And I can tell you for sure that the persistence of evil does not mean that God is blind or unwilling to deal with evil. And in closing, I'll say this, that it's only the God of the Bible, and I stand by this, it's only the God of the Bible who solves the mysteries of evil and the problem of evil by working through evil to bring the good. I already told you about Joseph. When they were selling him in Egypt, his brothers never imagined that he's going to be their quote-unquote savior, so that they don't die of starvation. Their brothers didn't know that. And God saw this coming, and he allowed Joseph to be thrown into that pit, to be picked up by the Ishmaelite traders, and sent to Egypt as a slave. It didn't feel good to be a slave. And his faith was tested in Potiphar's house. And he stood and said, how can I do such an evil thing against God? He stood. And God used him to save Egypt from collapse and to save his own family from starvation. God knew that this Israelite boy is going to become the prime minister of Egypt because he's best suited for the agricultural policies of Egypt to save lives for 7 years by storing up food. When he was in the pit, he cried. I'm sure it was not a good experience. But see what God did. He turned it around. And I can tell you a lot about our own Savior and how he was despised and he was beaten and he was wounded and then crucified. And people thought it was bad, you know, it's over. But on the third day he rose again, showing us that God is able to defeat even death itself, one of the worst enemies of man. And he says, Jesus speaking, he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he dies, will live again. Even death is defeated. The evil of death demonstrated before our very eyes through the resurrection of Christ and Jesus raising several others and so on. And so you can be sure that God is the only one who can bring good out of evil. And I close with my own story. I mean, I tell you, if you read my other book, it's The Raw Reflections, I have narrated my low moments. And the visual disability is child play, you know, compared to some of the things I've had to go through. You know, one of the worst things that ever happened in my life was the loss of my first wife in a tragic road accident back in 2006. She was driving our daughter to Nairobi from Eldoret to hospital. And this matatu driver, let me just shorten the story, kills her, rams into her. And thank God I still have my daughter. And so I was left with a 2-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 14-year-old. And yes, God has had his mercy on me and given me somebody else to walk with me, Julie, who is here this morning. But looking back, it was not fun to lose somebody you had been with for 15 years. And so I asked the big question. I mean, Lord, why? It's enough that you allowed a visual handicap. It's enough what I've been through. Why did you do this to me? The only answer I could get is how he has worked with other people in Scripture when it comes to pain and suffering. And maybe you're here and you're one of those that just doesn't like God because stuff has happened in your life. I am here as a positive example to tell you that you can live on. You can actually continue because God is bigger than the pain. He has answers. He has reasons. Sometimes the reasons are tough. He has reasons why certain things happen that are beyond us. And so I'll close by reciting for you Romans 8:28. And this is from him through Paul. And we know that all things work together for good for them that are called according to his purpose. For them that love God and are called according to his purposes. So the only way to make sense out of suffering is to live your life on God's terms, on the purposes of God. You'll find the answers. Politics has no answers. Money has no answer. Education has no answer. Philosophy has no answer. You saw that with David Hume. Science has no answer. If science had an answer, I would be seeing today because I've tried it all. I sang it to you this morning. If science had the answer, Mercy would not have died. Your loved one would not have died. Your father, your mother, your cousin. If science had the answer, you would not be living with that pain of the miscarriage or whatever it is, or failing an exam. Science can't help you. Money can't help you. Only God is big enough to answer your questions, and more than answer your questions, walk with you. Because he says, though, the psalmist speaking here, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. In fact, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup runs over. Pastor Mbonisi, please come. Let's all stand.
Bwana ni mchungaji wangu, sitapungukiwa kitu. Unlaza penye majani mabichi, unongoza kwa maji matulivu.
Unawisha nafsi yangu,
unawisha nafsi yangu.
Unaongoza kwa njia za haki,
unaongoza kwa njia za haki.
Nipitapo
bondeni mwa mauti, sitaogopa, wewe una
hakika, hakika wema nazo fadhili.
Nitaka nyumbani mwa Baba siku zote za maisha yangu.
gongo lako na fimbo yako.
Gongo lako na fimbo yako.
Vinanifariji mimi.
Vinanifariji mimi.
Waandaa meza mbele yangu.
Waandaa meza mbele yangu.
Machoni pa watesi wangu.
Machoni pa watesi wangu.
Hakika,
hakika wema nazo fadhili.
Haleluya.
Zitanifuata mimi.
Nitaka
nyumbani mwa Bwana.
Siku zote
za maisha yangu.
Hakika.
Zitanifuata mimi. Nitakaa nyumbani mwa Bwana siku zote za maisha yangu.
Thank you.